Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's October 4th, 2013. You're listening to the most mobile, the most dedicated poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Shotgun Long.
We are in the car again. This is reminiscent of Oklahoma. But we're on location today, moving location right now, so we may hear Scott barking out some directions. Well, we just came from a private screening of the movie Runner Runner. Yes, that's right. I am a big Justin Timberlake fan. I don't know if you knew that or not. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, well,
I know that you were going to turn right there instead of left.
I can't see your hands. It's dark.
It was a press screening, I guess. But yes. There were a bunch of people we didn't know they were there. They obviously were not pressed.
The place was packed.
It was packed.
I thought it was going to be me and you on a romantic date.
Yeah, I know. And I even got the popcorn for two, and you didn't even have any of it.
I know. I was looking dreamily into your eyes as Timberlake was up on the screen. I thought it was going to be a nice little bromance. Turns out we shared the whole theater with everybody.
Yeah, I got the child size soda. You know, it's the size of a small child. Thanks, Parks and Rec.
Oh, man.
So we saw Runner Runner, which obviously is the next hot poker movie out.
Yeah.
And I think going into it, I would say almost always know that, because the Rounders guys were behind this, right?
Yeah.
And they were very clear up front that this is not Rounders 2.
Right.
Not going to be a lot of poker in it. It's just a good action thriller movie with poker as a backdrop. That's probably the best way to describe it, and that's exactly what I think I would describe it after seeing it.
Right? I would say that's exactly right, and you and I knew that going in, that they're going to have some sort of... It was the mechanism to get him into the struggle of the movie, and
right.
They used poker as a mechanism to get him into the struggle, and that was basically all it was. There was no poker, really. But there was enough poker terminology thrown around where you knew it was Koppelman and his partner there. It was legitimate. The stuff they talked about was completely stuff that would be taken straight from the headlines from today.
Right. There was no I see you and raise you.
Yeah.
That kind of crap that always drives us crazy in poker movies,
exactly
right?
I mean,
the vernacular was legitimate.
That's exactly right. He sort of talked about, you know, situations, things like that. And they sprinkled enough of it throughout the movie that you'd be like, oh, hey, I'm a poker geek. I know what he means
right,
when he says
exactly.
That kind of thing. But there was no poker in the movie.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I was thinking at the beginning was the only real poker being played,
right?
And I guess that's what I was thinking during it is that it's almost like you're kind of like in this special fraternity.
Yeah.
If you're in the poker world like we are and our listeners are. That you kind of got a little more enjoyment out of it than maybe those other 300 people that we had no idea who they were there tonight,
right.
Because they didn't really
like Ben Affleck and
exactly, and they didn't get the whole thing. I mean, the one thing I leaned over to you at one point and said, you know, if the next thing is they're coding transactions to sell golf balls, I'm going to be bust a gut because,
yeah,
you know, the whole thing was supposedly inspired on true events, right? So to me, they kind of melded the Ultimate Bet and the full tilt scandal into one movie, right?
They absolutely did. And I know that you probably almost wanted to throw something at the screen when somebody in the movie says, Ponzi? I'm like, oh, no.
Don't get
him going. We'll get that Paru guy here, whatever his name is. And so, but really, you take that aside and just want to take the movie on its own validity. And it was fast-paced. It was over within an hour and a half. And, you know, there were a lot of funny lines in it, which I wasn't expecting.
Yes.
And it was sort of a thriller. You didn't really know how he was going to get himself out of the jam. And we're not going to spoil it for anybody. But
a very good finish.
Yeah, a nice little finish, nice little twist there, and I appreciate the movie. I mean, I did one of those Family Guy moments when Peter says he loves it when he goes to the movie and they actually say the title of the movie. And he starts giggling like a little girl. I was sort of doing that myself. I was like, he said Runner, Runner. So that right. had a good moment.
That's right. Movie.
So, but, you know, a good cast. And
yeah, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Ben Affleck and Justin Timberlake. And to be honest, I was on vacation at one point. I came back and the whole world hated Ben Affleck because he's going to be Batman now.
Oh, I know.
And I really had no idea. I'm like, why? Ben Affleck's a cool dude. It's perfect for Batman. But apparently the fanboy thing is fired up. But I like him.
Yeah.
And he's had some weird roles too, but this was a really good role for him. I think he could pull off this
tough guy,
internet kind of gambling titan in Costa Rica kind of character really well.
Yeah. I think that Timberlake is kind of branching out now because most of his roles are comedy. You know what I mean?
Right.
Most of the stuff that he does is funny, and there were a couple of funny lines that he said, but this movie was not a comedy at all.
Yeah,
it was geared as a thriller, and it really was. But I enjoyed it. I mean, I'm not going to complain about the movie because it was good.
Yeah.
It was enjoyable, and I was glad we got to see it.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess the final takeaway is, you know, if you're going hoping that it's a poker geek movie,
right,
you'll be disappointed. If you go and think that it's going to be a decent action movie, thriller, where you're going to get a little of that poker flavor, then I think it's going to be worth your $10 plus $13.25 for the large popcorn combo.
Way better than Lucky You. How about that?
Boy, how low is that bar?
So for all of our strategy fans, we have an extended strategy section of the show today. We're going to put that together for you now. But we recorded that today earlier while we were in the studio. So here we go. All right, we get to complete an O'Malley's move this week. Always love doing that. So here we go. We're going to refresh our memories with part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a $1, $2, no-limit hold'em cash game. This is our regular home game, so we've got a good handle on our opponents. Our image is an aggressive one, and we're usually successful in this game. We are trying to mix up our play tonight, though. We're seeing a lot of flops cheaply, and trying to outplay our opponents after the flop. We are in the MP, down 100, with 200 in front of us. Under the gun folds, plus one calls, plus two folds, and we look down at the seven of spades, seven of diamonds. This is a good hand, so we limp. The MP2 calls, hijack folds, cutoff folds, button calls, small blind calls, big blind checks, and with $10 in the pot, the flop comes down the seven of hearts, six of clubs, four of diamonds. This is a decent flop, and our hand is probably disguised pretty well. But something makes our spidey sense tingle as the small blind checks and the big blind makes it $8 to go. He's a solid player who knows the game well. He currently sits with 75 more than what we started the hand with. Where did this bet come from? It's folded around to us and we're quite puzzled. A check lead into this pot with so many to act behind him? Is there any question he's strong? We just have to figure out how strong. Hopefully not 8-5 strong. We make the call, not wanting to bloat the pot, and the rest of the table folds. There's roughly a quarter in the pot, and the turn is pretty much a blank. King of spades. He's first to act, and he leads out again, this time for 15. If this is a double barrel bluff, kudos to him. We can only call here. So much for outplaying our opponents post-flop. With $56 in the pot, the river is the five of hearts. Ugh. But he checks. So any 3 and any 8 beat us. What's the play here?
It doesn't seem to make sense to me for our opponent to have checked the river if he had the straight, and that's the only thing that has us beat right now. So I think we need a value bet here. I'm going to say, I don't know, $20?
Oof. Well, I mean, they all limped, so I don't know if somebody could possibly have a set of kings here. I don't think that's possible. I do feel like a 3 or an 8 is possible with a limped pot. But the check certainly has us seeming like this guy is scared. But it is 4 to a straight. You know, I don't know. I might just check and take a decent pot. It really depends if I know this player well enough that he knows that, you know, that he knows me as well, and if I would put in a bet there or not, you know. So if he knows that I would put in a bet and he has an eight, you know, he might check to us. I don't know. But I feel like if he's straightforward, I would value bet two. I just don't know. I don't know this player well enough from the description in the recording. So I don't know if I would bet. I'm real anxious now to see what happens.
Hello again. There really isn't any king we can put him on. Ace-king would have been a raise preflop. Same with king-king. He wouldn't have let out with king-queen or king-jack on that flop. Could it be a flop straight? Maybe he's hoping to string someone along with ace-seven? It could be two pair, and he thought he was value betting until the river. The only eight that makes sense is 8-8, and that really makes a lot of sense. But that's the only hand that beats us. There are still a lot of hands that are conceivable that we beat, like two pair, or perhaps we got into one of those extremely fortunate flopped set-over-set scenarios. After weighing all of this, and giving our opponents several once-overs, we decide this is a give-up check. It's just too risky of a play to check behind with a straight and lose the chance at getting some money out of us. We're good here. We count out $30 and put it into the pot. He calls and turns over fours. Perhaps we should have been more aggressive early on. Did we leave some money out there on this one? Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, in poker, a win isn't enough. This game is about maximizing your profits, and the way we played this one leaves much to be desired. I hope to see you on the felt.
All right, well, I agree that we should have raised on the turn for value, especially since that king could have helped him, but not enough. I mean, I really dismissed pocket kings from the beginning on this hand. So I think that was our opportunity to get some value out of this hand. But, you know, another interesting thing I was thinking about after I heard this is, obviously, I'm playing it from our point of view, and really, I think you need to. I feel bad that I didn't go back and play it back from our opponent's point of view. And, you know, O'Malley described himself as having an aggressive image in this game, right? Mm-hmm. And I think a real effective play against somebody with aggressive like that would be to check that river if we had that straight. You know, if I'm the big blind and had that straight, you know, you never. It's almost incredibly dangerous to check a river when you have the nuts and hope somebody bets behind you. Right. And so many beginners make that mistake all the time. And, oh, I hope the chick raises you, right? But against an aggressive player, I think, I mean, like at how I described what I would do there, I mean, I totally eliminated the possibility of a straight because he checked the river. So, I mean, I think it was a perfect opportunity for the big blind who flopped the straight to be strong on those two streets, check the river, lure us in to think that we're giving up, and have us put our value bet in like we did, and then hammer us at that point. But that's the second or third level thinking, and I don't know whether we need to do that in 1-2.
You know, though he won this hand, I'm not, like, I don't know if you're getting to that point now, but I'm not certain I agree with the $30 bet. Before the break, I said, you know, we did face all limpers pre-flop. So a 3 or an 8 is possible. It's very likely if somebody had a 3 in their hand, they're open-ended, and they would have gone either betting it or whatever the whole way, hoping that you would fold. And if you didn't, they finally get there. Now, they play it like you said, where they're weak. And if the player had the 3, I think this might have been how he would have played it, because it's the bottom end of the straight, and so he might just check-call the river. You know what I mean? So I'm even though we won this hand, if I had the 3 here, someone else could very well had pocket eights here, or 8-9, or something. And so now I'm nervous, but I'm not positive, so I'm going to check call any reasonable bet with a 3 in my hand. I'm not going to check raise, I'm not going to value bet it either, because it's such the ignorant end. So I don't know if I would have made that $30 bet in the end, because I'm just betting generally into a hand that's only going to call that's got the 8 or the 3. We got lucky here that somebody had pocket fours and had a hand that they thought they could reasonably call with, but
yeah, I guess that's where I disagree. I think there's lots of hands that are going to call this $30 that we have beat.
Like over pairs, or why would somebody have a king still at this point?
Any two pair hands?
Yeah, I guess.
You know, if he was betting on two streets I mean, either had a draw, which obviously you missed. We're not getting anything out of him anyhow, so it doesn't matter whether we check or bet, right?
Well, if he had a draw, he hit.
Well, exactly. And so I guess what I'm saying is that I don't see him having something. I don't see him having nothing at this point. I see him having something. And if he's given up and we're setting the price, I mean, I set the price a little lower because I won value, but, you know, $30, I mean, I guess it's $30 was the right price to set because he got it out of him.
Yeah.
But I just think there's a lot of hands here that we have beat that would call a value bet, a reasonable real value bet. And I'm not really sure to be scared when we get when you get there. I mean, yeah, I understand it's the wrong end of the straight, but I think it's put a lot of credit on us, or giving us a lot of credit to think that we have an eight in our hand at that point after we've been betting it so strong. I'm not saying people wouldn't play it that way. I know quite a few people that would be shutting down even if they hit it with a three there, but that's just a lot to think about, I think, at that point, or, you know, a lot to be scared of at that point. I think if I hit the straight, I would bet it, and, you know, if he raises him, he has the eight, you know, great, fine. But, I mean, I would hate to give up that value on the end if I'm playing this for the straight and I hit my straight. It doesn't seem like a good way of playing the hand.
Well, the other thing, too, is that you're talking about all these hands, so somebody could have 3-4, you know what I mean? And they could have bet it first. I'm not saying they would have bet it this way, but I'm saying, or 7-8, you know, where that top pair to flop with open-ended draw or gut shot draw.
Right,
then the king comes, and they sort of put out a feely bet and get a call, so now they're a little worried. Now the five gets there, yeah, you have the eight, and you bet it. But, I mean, I don't know. Out of two pair, I guess that two pair would be 7-6, maybe. Unless somebody would limp with 7-4.
Well, we're talking about two different things now. We're talking about, I'm talking if I'm the big blind and I have a three.
Right.
I'm not checking that river act. If I'm taking the lead throughout the entire hand, I'm not checking that river act because I'm worried that my lone opponent has an eight. You know, if he has an eight, great. But I really, that seems, while it's a plausible holding, it's not enough for me to be scared not to try to get one last street of value out of this hand.
All right, so let's take that hand from the standpoint that you had a three in your hand. What's the other card that you would play this hand this way?
That three, you would have lived the big blind?
Yeah, if you had the three and you checked.
Well, in the big blind, doesn't matter what I have.
Right.
It was flipped around, so I'm just going to check with anything.
Right, so you have 3X, right, in your hand.
Right.
And that flop comes, and all you have is a three. What card is in your hand that makes you bet $8 now?
3X. That I can't answer.
Right,
but
so
that's what
I mean,
I'm saying. Is,
but that's what I mean. That's how you narrow the hands down.
I'm trying to play from the big blind's perspective, because you're saying if you were the big blind and had the three, river the straight, you wouldn't bet, right? Is what you said?
Right.
All right, so it doesn't matter what my other hand. It doesn't matter whether I bet the flop or turn. I'm talking about the river now. The river, if I bet out those two streets with a three and whatever other card you want to give me, mm-hmm. except for the, you know, the eight, and now I hit my straight, I've got a bet at that point. I can't be scared that my lone opponent has an eight at that point.
Yeah, I guess. I'm
so thinking from that point of view, then that takes away the straight, in my opinion. You know, a set of kings is incredibly unlikely here, I think. So I take that away. I mean, really, I mean, there's a very low percentage of hands that have us beat here. But there's also a decent percentage of hands that have something here that are going to call a river bet. So I don't want to just check behind because I'm scared of those one or two illogical hands for my opponent to have, because I am going to get called by a lot of worse hands in mine here.
Yeah, that's a good point. I just don't know if I agree with the value bet. I just don't know if I do or not. I mean, I just don't know. I don't know. I mean, again, I don't know what this guy thinks of us either. You were saying he thought we were aggressive, so he could check the three. Like you said.
Yeah, and I guess that's what I was getting at, is that if this guy is really honed in on us and knows that we're aggressive, I could make a case for him leading all the way and then checking the river to get us, to lure us into thinking that we're weak, which we did, and making a bet and then raising and getting more value out of it than if we bet. Because let's say we flopped a straight and O'Malley has nothing or whatever. And we bet the river. Are we really going to get any money out of O'Malley here?
Right.
or not. Right. So the only way to get money out of them is to check and make it look like we missed or we're weak or we're scared now and let that aggressive O'Malley player fire into us and then raise, and we're obviously not probably not going to get called on the raise, but now we've got whatever that money is that's coming in. So that would be the only way I think I could check a river in this situation.
The only thing that makes me nervous with the three scenario is if my opponent had 7-8.
Yeah.
You know, it makes me nervous because a 7-8 would play it that way. A 7-8
would eight
call.
7-8 and pocket 8s, absolutely. Yeah. Both of those could have, they very well could have been in this hand. But I don't think the odds of those hands, our opponent having those hands, is so large for us to be scared to bet our
three.
Our three on the end.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess
could be wrong, you know.
I guess,
but,
no, I know. But I'm just saying, if O'Malley had 7-8, he would play it almost exactly the same way.
Absolutely would. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, let's say, if I were to bet my three on the end, and O'Malley called and turned over 7-8 or pocket 8s, I would not be surprised at all. So I'm not saying that, yeah, I'm taking it out. I'm just saying those would have to be, those are the only two hands, maybe 8-9, suited 8-9 of some sort, but that it was a rainbow flop. Well, no, but that'd be open-ended. So those would be the three hands that obviously have his beat that are plausible.
Yeah.
But there's a whole range of other hands that he could have. Repair would be calling all the way down, maybe.
The last part I had in my final thought was that I said I agreed with the raise on the turn and probably would have raised the flop too because of all the limps and stuff. And if we had done that, we would
have
made
true.
A lot more money.
Absolutely. That's true. I totally forgot about that. Yeah, we totally missed two streets of value.
Yeah.
At least there.
But interesting hand. I didn't think it was going to be that interesting when we started it.
You always say that. Every hand's interesting.
Yeah, it's always interesting. I always. That's the beauty of this game, really. You know, there's so many ways to play it, so many ways to think about it, and to be successful at it, you know, you really got to know what you're doing. So, very cool.
All right, it's time for a hand of the week. And remember to send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. Quickly becoming one of our Andy Up All-Stars, Vic G is back.
Yes.
And he says, I know you guys are looking for hands. We are. We still are.
I have two right here.
So you sent this one in. It was from a 1-2 no limit hold'em cash game.
All right.
It's our 1-2 no limit cash day.
Cash episode.
You know, because it's so rare that we get to talk about 1-2 no limit hold'em cash game hands. He says it's nine handed, and he is in the cutoff with $800.
Wow.
I know. I've never had $800 ever at the table. He says, one of the more aggressive female players is on my right, sitting with $661. Boy, she must have her chips stacked perfectly. She's a good player, especially in tournaments, but she likes to gamble it up in cash games on occasion. She's been playing most hands over the past hour and grew her stack up from 200.
Okay, so we know she's aggressive, and she's good, and she likes to gamble. All right. I'm ready.
She's having a good day.
And so, she's having a good day. All right, I'm
there's
ready.
Nothing about this that I like, to be honest. I'm hoping to flop a set here.
She's invincible.
All right, so the under the gun, under gun plus one call, and our the aggressive female superstar player here is in the hijack and raises to 15.
And what do we have?
Actions on us in the cutoff with the ace of diamonds, king of spades.
Hmm. All right, so she's aggressive, and I normally I would call in this situation, so I think I'm just going to call.
Interesting. That's exactly what I was going to do. That can't be right.
Well, that can't be right. Rewind.
Yeah.
Let's start over.
I guess my thought is, I mean, again, I'm not a big on ace-king. I mean, if I'm first in, obviously I'm going to raise. If I'm isolating, I've got one other opponent, sure, I'm going to raise. But we've got two limpers in this hand, and then we got this woman that, you know, I'm not scared of her, but I'm giving her due credit based on what we know here. And my hand is just ace-king right now. It's got a lot of potential to really brutalize her, depending on what the flop is, but I don't think I want to poke the bear quite yet, right?
Right, and, you know, like we'll always say, and make Gambit mad at me, it's not a made hand yet. You want to let the hand develop, and you got a lot of money in the pot there. So, yeah, you could re-raise and, you know, maybe take down a $16 pot or something. But I think what Vic is trying to do is to take all that $661. So this will definitely disguise your hand.
Potentially some of our other opponents' money, too. I mean, yes, I mean, I guess that's one of the arguments people say. Well, if you just call here, you're going to invite these other two people in. And to be honest, I don't really mind that right now.
Yeah.
You know, again, I'm hoping for my hand to hit hard. I'm not looking for a top here with my hand. I'm hoping for something. I hope it develops into something better than that. And, you know, if I got three opponents, that's more money in the pot.
Yeah. Yeah, and always cautiously.
Exactly. Absolutely.
With that sort of an invite, so. Okay, so I call
if
you
a great. If I miss a flop and there's some action, then this hand is 7 deuce to me at that point.
Yeah.
And I've committed $15.
Yeah.
Okay. Vic says, I probably have her beat at this point, and a good flop may enable me to stack her, but I'm sure that the first two limbers are thinking the same thing. That's an interesting point. Ace diamonds, king of spades isn't a made hand, but I have position on her. She may get aggressive if I raise, and I don't want to be flipping for my stack if she's got a pocket pair. Love that thought as well. Calling would also disguise my hand strength. That's the number one reason I like it.
Yeah.
Plus, a raise may awaken one of the limpers, and we still have not heard from the button and blinds yet either, so I call the $15. I like Vic.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice. It's always interesting, these hands of the week, because, you know, they usually send them in because they want us to tell them how we would have played it and why, you know what I mean? But then they always tell us all their thoughts and what they did was right and wrong, and it's like, okay.
Just get the pat the
back. So I appreciate it, you know, I appreciate it. But I'm trying not to let any of what he says influence me after the fact. I want to make sure I'm making these decisions on what I'm hearing before he tells me his stuff, so.
Gotcha.
I'm happy with the call right now.
Okay. The button, who had just rebought for $200, calls the 15. He's a new player. We don't have any read on him. Small blind folds and big blind calls, and both limpers fold, interestingly enough. So there's 65 in the pot, and the flop is the king of diamonds, queen of hearts, six of clubs. So we do have top.
Which you don't want. Which you're not interested in.
I didn't say I didn't want.
You said you weren't interested in it.
Not exciting enough for me right now, depending on how that action goes.
And just to say real quick, when the limpers fold, I'm not shocked by that. I mean, these people are limping because they want to play 7-8 or something, and they're playing tight, obviously, if they're limping up front, unless they have aces and they're trying to trap. I don't really mind the fold, just because they're getting pot odds to call or whatever.
I don't mind it. I guess what I'm saying is that, I mean, people can play their hands however they want, whatever. Yeah. But I don't understand the concept of limping under the gun and not being willing to call a $15 raise when there's three other people in.
Yeah.
What are you limping with under the gun that you don't want that kind of pot? I mean, I would assume if you're limping under the gun, you're playing suited connectors or something.
Probably.
This is perfect at that point.
Yeah,
this
but
is
you're exactly out of position. What you want. You don't want to play suited connectors.
Well, you're out of position, but you've got $65 in the pot already. You're going to put 15 in, and you got a hand that could stack everyone. Hmm. I mean, there's very few hands I would ever limp under the gun, so I guess that's the other weird thing I got to, you know. But when I see people, it's usually people that are limp folding under the gun usually have a hand, as you said, that they want to see cheap. And I guess my point is, what is that hand? Because if you're not willing to call the 15, it's probably not worth limping, hoping to see it cheap, because it's not going to happen. And if it is a hand like suited connectors, then you got what you want, and you need to be in this.
Are you thinking then that they should have raised, since you're willing to call 15? No, why not bet 15?
I'm going to plus one. If I'm in, I'm raising.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So if you're limping for two, then you should be raising for 15 if you're going to call 15. You know what I mean? And then take command
right.
of the hands.
So. If you're not willing to call 15, then I don't think you should be limping there. You should be folding right away. Why put that $2 in if you're not going to willing to call another 13?
Yeah. It sounds
when
like
three other people are in.
Cheap players. I mean, the other thing, too, is I mean, which.
That's what I'm saying. I guess I should be more direct in what I'm saying. I'm being critical of those people playing. I think if they are chucking $2 into the pot under the gun every time they're under the gun hoping to get to see a flop, they are. Just bleeding money.
But right? Only two at a time, not 15.
Two at a time, and that adds up.
But they get six, seven and a half hands or whatever at their rate.
Gosh.
Then you're 15. You never know. 9, 10 of diamonds, 7, 8 of hearts, ace, deuce.
Exactly. Those are all hands that I would be ecstatic with the situation. I'm like, excellent. Three people in, $13 more, I'm in.
Yeah.
Let's
no,
play
I,
poker.
I'm in too. I'm in. I'm all in, buddy.
Oh man!
But I don't see. I see
maybe a small
do that all
pair.
Time.
I guess maybe a small pair is But even a small pair, you got great odds here to stack people with, right?
Yeah, now you want to hit your flop and make your set.
Yeah, so I don't know what it is. I mean, I'm going to presume it was something like King Jack or King Queen or some kind of absolute crap hand under the gun that they should have never limped in. And if they limped in and hit, they probably were going to get stacked themselves. So all the more reason not to do it.
Yeah.
Hmm. I don't understand it.
Me neither.
All right, so again, our flop was King of Diamonds, Queen of Hearts, Six of Clubs, so we do get top. The big blind checks to the villain, who bets $45. We are next act.
I don't know. Here's the deal. She's aggressive. We have position on her. And we know she's good, but, you know, is it going to be one of those hands where they had the one time she has aces and we have ace-king? Or is it more likely her normal aggressive she could have King Queen or King Jack here. Either we're crushed or we're crushing her. That always is always a scary thing. I tend to be a little more straightforward with protecting my hands when I'm doing these sort of analysis, because it always sounds like we're behind or at the end of the hand we always end up losing. So normally I would raise here in this situation just because the guy behind us could easily have Jack 10. That's the type of hand that would, in position, would call with Jack 10, and you're protecting against, you know, that sort of draw. At the same time, you know, we have top, and we'll have position on her, but I don't know if the button's going to come along or not. So,
right.
I don't know. I might call. I might just call and see what happens on the turn, because the only draw out there, really, unless you're having a gut shot like Ace 10. The only real draw that we're worried about is Jack 10. And even that, you know, will Jack 10 call a $45 bet? And would Jack 10 make a $45 bet? She might make that bet.
Yeah, I think she would. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. The turn's going to be real interesting if I just call. So I think I'll call and see what happens. I don't know if I want to raise here, because I might get, you know, this guy behind us too. If you remember, he was felted. So he could be on tilt and could be shoving. Is 200 on anything
here?
No,
that's the right. No, oh yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. Yeah, the button's still off the act after. You're right.
Yeah, so he's behind us. So I don't know. I mean, I think I'll call, and I'm still disguising my hand. You know, she may think I'm on a draw now. I might want to shove me out, and then I can snap her off. So, you know, on the turn if a blank comes. So, I think I'll call.
You know, this is the kind of hand that makes me want to quit poker. Because here, I mean, I'm listening to you talk, and you're making good points. And, you know, initially, I was going to say, I want to call here because I think we're stronger than her. Obviously, there's some hands that she could have that are better. Obviously, we get other people in the hand, too, that I got to worry about. But I don't want to poke the bear, like you said, at this point, and blow this hand with two more streets of betting to go. But, you know, the Jack 10 is a very powerful argument, I think, here.
Yeah.
Because if someone does have Jack 10 and the ace comes, that's one of the cards that we're hoping to get, right?
Yeah.
But the Jack 10, that's not what we want at that point. So that is really tough at that point to figure out, does somebody have Jack 10 and therefore it kills three of my outs? Or do they not have Jack 10 and I do want that ace to come? I don't know if I want the ace to come now. I don't know.
Yeah.
So if I call the 45 and I don't know, then I'm going to win a king is all. Now I'm down to the two outs to really feel comfortable about my hand.
Yeah.
But I don't think I could fold here.
Here's the other thing,
too. Raising seems crazy. I don't know what to do.
If the button has the Jack 10, that's what's worse when you make the call. Because now you're totally giving him the odds. Whereas if you shut him out, he's going to have to shove his last, whatever, 150 or whatever it is, 170, 185. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, to get that, and then at that point, you've already raised enough that would cover him anyway, so it's not going to be a difficult call for you. But if you call 45, now you're giving him the odds to hit his hand. He's going to just call the 45, the ace or the 9 will come, and now you're, like, at a major decision. Uh-huh. You know, I mean, not a major, because you've got 800 in front of you, and he's got 100 and whatever, but it's her that I'm worried about. You know, her holding is, if she's as aggressive as he says, she could easily have made it 15 preflop with Jack 10 suited and now continued to bet with it to represent what's on the board, but not only that, but mislead you when she has Jack 10 and hits her open-ended. So,
right.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think I'm still going to just call, but if I was online, I'd raise.
All right, well, Arima says, I don't think this aggressive player is ahead in the hand. In fact, I may have her stuck if she's got ace-queen or king-jack. She could be holding king-queen, or maybe one of the two players yet to act have made two-pair hit a set if they're trying to trap her two. I want to slow play this hand for now. The button and big blind can only really call they have a hand, and I don't want to scare them off. This is a continuation bet from the villain. She's going to fold to my raise anyway, and I won't extract any more chips from her. So I call the $45.
Yeah, and I forgot about the big blind. So that's the other thing, too. A big blind could easily have called out of position with Jack-10, and now he's checking, hoping to see the turn for a good price or check raise or whatever. So I forgot about that person, too. So now you got two people behind you that could possibly have Jack-10. Uh-huh. And your call, if another call comes, easily going to be, you know, the big blind would easily have the pot ice a call there, you know, with implied, too. So, yeah, it's tough. It's tough. But I don't disagree with the $45 call, I guess. You know, I said I would do it, and I'm sticking by it.
Yeah, I think a tougher decision is going to be coming on the turn, I think.
Yeah.
The $45 right now, and I have a stack of 800. I don't like to make decisions based on my stack, necessarily. But, again, I got some chips that, on the borderline, I'm willing to commit.
Yeah.
Them. And this is a borderline situation here. All right, so the button calls, leaving himself 140 behind, but the big blind folds. So Vic wants to know, what is the button holding? Is he steaming from being felt in the previous hand? There's now two under the pot. And the turn is the ace of hearts. King of diamonds, queen of hearts, six of clubs, ace of hearts is our board now.
Oof.
And as Vic says, this is a good card for me, but not great. Yes, probably for the Jack reasons we talked about.
Yeah.
He says, I'm now ahead of two pair of hands, but someone is playing Jack 10. They hit Broadway, and I'm still behind a flop set. But I have outs either way. If someone has ace queen, they're not going to fold this point with a $200 pot, and I have them trapped. And the villain makes the same $45 bet.
The same bet. That's kind of weird.
I tend to do that, and I'm not a great player, so it's probably not a perfect thing to compare it to, but sometimes it's just easier to make the same bet. And, but it does usually scream of trying to control the pot a little bit.
Yeah, a lot of times it means they're weak, but it could also mean they're trying to extract the absolute most out of you. And so if you call 45 last street, you might call 45 again.
45 last street, yeah.
But the ace is the intriguing part. She's betting
there's
the same
There's no reason to keep the pot slow here because the only draw got there now.
Right? Yeah, yeah, the only draw got there. So,
unless she had a backdoor hearts, I guess. But
now you could have backdoor hearts. Yeah. Jeez. I think I would raise now. I want to know what's going on here. I'm tired of everyone else setting the pace for me. You know, now I'm going to raise and see. Here's why. Let's say I raise, which is a perfectly reasonable play here.
Right.
And a perfectly reasonable raise is to like 150. I'll know right away. If the guy behind me shoves, it doesn't matter anymore.
Right, because you already got
I have him covered.
Got him covered.
And then if she folds, now, okay, well, I'm hoping this guy doesn't have Jack 10, but I still have outs to win. And if she calls or shoves, then I have, you know, then I have a bigger decision. But if she folds, then I've made the play I need to make, and it doesn't matter. But if she shoves on me, then I have a different decision to make. So at that point, if I do raise and she shoves, I can get away from it. If I believe her, if I don't believe her, you know, and I lose this hand, I can easily, you know, apparently we usually play 1-2. We usually start with 200. So if he has 800. He's clearly killing the game, and right. He hasn't lost any money yet. If he loses his hand, he'll still have about, you know, 150 or so in front of him. So, you know, he's lost a little bit, but not much, and he could probably get it back. So, I'm, you know, if we think of poker as a really big session, you know, he's also huge. If that happens, it's a huge pot that he would win too. So, if he got his hand, so I think I'm going to raise here to like 130 or so, 120.
Yeah, I really hate this hand. I just don't know what I'm doing in this hand. But I will say, I think there is a risk, I think, in raising here, having the button call and the villain get out. Because if the villain's calling at that point, I think he's got to have something, I would think.
Right, but the only thing that beats us then is the Jack-10, and we still have
Alex. That's true. We still have Alex, but yeah, but wouldn't we... The bigger value in this hand is the villain stack, right? So I don't think we want to get her out in that case, particularly if the button calls, which we don't know what he's going to do, you know. So I don't think a good resolution to this bet is to... raise big, have the button call, and the villain get out. If I'm raising, I want, you know, either the button to not have what we're afraid of and get out, and then I'm just heads up with the villain, or that he does have what we fear he does, but now the villain's still in, and we can, you know, make up the money that we are losing to the other guy for the river bet with her.
Yeah.
But that's all too much to figure out, I think. You know, I mean, you could do your best on that, but
yeah, that's it, and that makes sense. But the problem for me in that line of thinking is that it seems like when we do hands of the week, it seems like you're always trying to get the entire stack of the person and not just being happy with the size of the pot that's out there. In this case, it would be a $300 pot or more already, and you only have 800, so that's a huge increase in your pot. I don't want to run the risk of her picking up a heart draw now and getting it in for only $45 when I make her pay for it with $130 or $140.
Well, that's an absolute another consideration, absolutely. But I guess what I'm saying is if the guy behind us calls, I'm going to assume I can't assume he has his beat, but...
He's
got a hand of some sort and either has his beat or probably has outs to catch up to us somehow. And then we lose the value out of the other woman. I think we want the villain in this hand still.
Do you think ace queen is a likely holding for, say, the button?
I mean, I think if we called with ace king preflop,
he could call ace queen.
Why would you not call with ace queen, right?
Right, and then that $45 bet, would you have called that after the flop with queens, middle pair with ace kicker?
I think it complicates it with us being in the hand.
Yeah.
If it was just a villain, then yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I'm trying to put this guy on a hand that's
and I think that's kind of the exercise I'm going through, and I don't really see it. Other than the fact that he's steaming, so, you know.
Yeah.
Players steam. They play all kinds of crazy stuff. I mean, you could have a six and hope, you know, and just caught up. He got a two pair, which he didn't catch up, obviously. He's behind now, but... So he really could be holding a lot of things, but I think the most logical holding for him, if he calls, and that's the problem, is we don't know. I mean, the $45 he could call with all kinds of stuff. It's if we do what we were talking about and raise to 150, if he immediately calls, then yeah, I think the only reasonable holding I can put him on is Jack 10, which means that we need to catch up to beat him, and then we're going to hope that the villain comes along so we can at least get some money out of her if we don't catch up.
Yeah. I
agree. The $300 is a great boost to our stack, but if he's got Jack 10, then it's going to be really tough for us to get that $300, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's going to be a lot easier for us to get $300 out of the villain.
If she doesn't have us crushed.
Right.
You know, I mean, we don't know what she has either. She could have the Jack 10.
Yeah. Well, they both could. I mean, it could be really
drunk. And then the hearts, too. Now the hearts come into play, too.
Exactly.
You know, are you going to protect against that hand as well?
So, you know what, I'm going to be, I was emailing with one of our listeners last night, and she was like, I'm tired of playing scared little girl poker. So I was like, you know what, I play scared little boy poker all the time.
Yeah.
And so, you know what, I'm going to play scared little boy poker here, and I'm just going to call. I hate doing that, because I hate giving up whatever, but I don't even know what positional advantage I have. I have it on the villain, and in my mind, I'm trying to separate the fact that he's already described who the villain is here, you know.
Yeah.
From the button. But so we don't have position on everybody, but we have position on her, right? So I don't really know what that means at this point. So I hate to let her keep controlling, like you said. I want to set the price, but there's just too much going on here that I don't know yet. And I think for me, I'm happy playing scared little boy poker and calling the 45 here and then seeing what happens on the river. And if the guy behind me raises all in and then she calls, then I think I got my answer, right? One of the two of them has Jack 10, and I don't really want to draw against that at that point.
Yeah, no, I don't want to draw against Jack 10.
If he just calls behind me, then, you know, I'm still in Never Never Land, but, you know, we'll see what happens in the river, you know?
Ace or King comes, I don't have to worry about it for the most part. Something else comes that you best 45 again, then that's going to be a tougher decision.
Yeah, okay. Well, I would have raised, you'd called, so let's see what happens.
Okay, Vic says, I've seen this, makes the same bet on the turn. This oftentimes indicates weakness, usually a blocking bet. It's too small to be a value bet, not big enough to run out the draws. So my attention turns to the button, who is sitting with only 140 and facing a $45 bet. He really can't call. Now would be the time for him to give up the hand or shove. I still think I have the villain beat, but if the button has the beat, I can try and play a sizable side pot with the villain if she three barrels. So I call the $45.
See, I don't agree with that, though, that the button couldn't just call. You don't know what the button has. If the button has Jack 10, he could just call. If he has Jack 10 of hearts, he could just call. I mean, there are all kinds of hands at Jack 10, you know, Jack 10.
Or even anything else. I mean,
anything else could call.
Kind of the problem, I think, that I get in trouble with our listeners a lot is they feel like they're pot committed when they're not. I mean, this guy just rebought for 200, right?
Right.
If he calls to $45 here, he's still got 95 left. You know, I realize there's a ton of people that think that's ridiculous and you should just shove if you're going to call there, but I'm not one of them. And I think there are other people like me out there that would call this 45, and if I lose the hand, I'm down 100. It's not, maybe not the terrifically great way to play, but I'm one of the people that are not immediately thinking that if I'm going to call 45 here, I need to shove in 140.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, if anybody who learned to play poker in Florida knows, $100 buy-in for a 1-2 game was the standard for years.
Right, yeah.
And we've all had to make that work, so... You know, if you're telling me you can't make it work with 95, then something's not right. So I don't mind the call there, especially if I have Jack 10, and I got these two aggressive players who have these huge stacks just going at it, and I've got the nuts, why not just call? Why, because you're afraid of that one heart dropping? Well, okay, yeah. Well, maybe you have Jack 10 of hearts, and you're not afraid of the heart, because, you know what I mean, who knows? But I can't say convincingly that he has to shove or fold here. I don't agree with that at all.
No, I agree.
It's on so him, right?
We call the $45. The button doesn't think too long before moving all in for his last 140, so what do we know?
Yeah.
Making it 95 to call. The villain now moves all in, making it 556 total.
Oh, man.
I guess that's how he knew she had 661. It's like a counted down for him. 511 more for us to call with top two. So the 525 in the main pot, 416 in the side pot. Before we have, we're at the act, he says the side pot would be big enough that I could still lose the main and the button and realize a small profit. So I'm no longer interested in analyzing the button's hand. What should I do? Well, again, I think that's what we got back to. I mean, if, you know.
Bro, this worked out for you in the sense that you said you want to get the money from the woman.
Right.
You know,
right.
So
this is not how I
wanted
to get it, though.
Right. So now you have to wonder, does he have Jack 10 and she has a draw, or just... She's
that's
just so
really
aggressive.
It, right? I mean, it's hard to imagine that neither one of them has a Jack 10, right? So now it's a coin flip on...
Which one it is.
For the guy behind us, which we don't really care about. Or if she has it, then we're really screwed.
Right. If she has it, we still have outs, but they're very few. If she has a draw, then we're way ahead, and we make the call instantly. But
well, you know, the other thing, too, is if she has it, we have outs, but what does the guy behind us have? He probably has some of our outs, right?
He might have some of our
probably
outs.
Has an ace or a king.
He might, yeah.
Or could have both.
Yeah. He could have some of our outs.
Yeah, I don't like this situation anymore.
No. I mean, I can see what his reasoning is going to be by the way he described this. He's going to say, I could tell already that he's going to think that she's, because she's aggressive and likes to gamble in cash games, which is what he said early on, that he's going to think that his call, he's ahead of her still. He thought he was ahead of her before, and he still thinks he is, so he's going to call. Me, I probably would have folded. I would have to really know her and really know that I was ahead to make that call. So I realize I've only invested, what, 45, 90, $100 on this, and I have 800 in front of me to start.
Yeah.
You know, so I have 700 now instead. If I'm wrong, I have 150. If I was right, yeah, okay, so I win, you know, a $1,000 pot, putting in 500.
Nice pot.
600 of my own, so I really only win about 400. I don't know. I don't know if I'm getting the right odds to hope to hit my... You have to know if you're ahead or not here, and you can't know that. We said that Jack 10 would be an ideal... She played this just like Jack 10 would play it. You know, if she did raise with Jack 10 preflop, she would bet 45 to represent the ace-king, And then the turn gives it the nuts, and she made her the bet that we said. Either when you bet 45 like that again, either you're weak and it's a blocking bet, or it's, hey, I'm going to keep stringing the biggest stack at the table along because I've got the absolute nuts and he's never going to put me on it. So
let me ask you this, because this is interestingly enough, this is kind of a situation that I was emailing our listener about last night. The difference in that was that she had ace-king preflop and there was a big bet like this and she ended up folding.
Uh-huh.
And worried whether that's a leak in her game that she's not willing to gamble preflop with ace-king. And ultimately what I said is, in a cash game, you're there all night. So you can wait for the right position. You don't necessarily have to take those crazy chances, I think. Right. The tournament's a little bit different. But, okay, so, and I'm like, you know what, why not wait to the fold or the turn when you have more information? So here's a great situation where we have ace-king, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're on the turn, so we have a lot of information, but it's still a gamble, right? So what I'm bringing up is I have nothing to add at this point, but I am really curious in hearing from our listeners on what they think about this at this point, because, I mean, is this a leak in mine and other people's games that I'm not willing to gamble here with top two for a huge pot against a woman that could have anything? Or do I just realize, as we just deduced, that we've only put 100 of our 800 in this, and we really don't know where we are right now, so the safest thing is to fold and then wait to a position, a time in some hand when we do feel more confident.
Yeah.
Or am I giving up too much value by insisting on it being too perfect before I'm willing to commit my entire stack?
You know, the more information you have, the easier it is to fold. And if this was preflop, I might have gotten it all in with one of these two characters because she's aggressive and whatever, and the other guy was steaming. But now that we've gotten to the turn, and we have two pair, but her shove either means that she wants to isolate and get us out, or she's not afraid of our stack. And both of those things make a lot of sense, but I don't know which one.
It's a
50-50 no matter what scenario you use for all these different things.
So that's what I'm saying, is we're coin flipping here
again
for
with one card to come.
$500 in a 1-2 game.
Yeah.
Now, this isn't a 5-10 or 10-25 game. This is a 1-2. That's 2.5 initial buy-ins for most people for a coin flip. I mean, if somebody came up to you and said, hey, let's flip for, $500 on this coin, I can't imagine you ever doing that, right?
No. And if you take each pot individually, you're betting how much you shove? 5-something. So you're betting like 500 to win 500 in the main, and you're betting 500 to win 400 in the side or whatever. I mean, it's crazy when you think about $511 to win a $900 pot. And then you might not even win 900, you might only win half of it.
Win 500, yeah.
So you might win a little bit of a profit if you win the pot, but I just don't know. I think I'm going to let it go. I'm probably wrong, but I'm going to let it go because...
Well, I'll say this. I don't think you're probably wrong. I think I'm not going to be surprised if she turns over like king-queen or something, which would make it wrong in the sense that we had her beat, right?
Right.
It doesn't make it a wrong decision, does it?
No, I don't think so, because then you're just being results-oriented. I think that the right play is to fold here, given the math, given the situation, and given the way it's played out. I think the right play is to fold.
All right, I'm folding, but I'm a scared little boy. So,
I'm a scared man, and I'm folding. So, scared is scared.
But I guess that's wrong. I'm not scared here. I just don't think it. I've analyzed it to the degree that I'm capable of analyzing it, and I just don't think it's a good bet.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, she could turn over something like Queen of Hearts or something.
All right, our hero says, what can the villain have here? If she had king-queen, she would have bet more than 45 on the turn to defend against the straight and flush draws. Can she have jack-10 for Broadway? The $45 c-bet with an open-ended straight draw makes sense, but why make such a huge shove now? She's got me trapped. I check her breathing. On the previous hand, she was breathing heavy when she had the nuts. I don't notice her breathing heavy now. A good sign, but not accurate 100% of the time. Would she shove with a king and a heart draw? If that was her plan, why didn't she just bet more than $45 initially? She couldn't know that either of us would raise her.
I'm way ahead if she's got King of Hearts, X of Hearts, so after about a minute, I decide to call.
That's a huge call.
There's now $620 in the main pot, $832 in the side pot. The deal rivers a beautiful ace of clubs, giving me the nuts. But I was ahead when the money went in. But was I ahead when the money went in? After all, that's all that really matters. She looks disappointed and tables King of Hearts, Nine of Hearts for the missed heart draw. After I table my hand, the button mucks. So not only do I rake in both pots, but my full house is the high hand for the 30-minute period, earning me another $200.
All right, so let's go back to the beginning and say she's a good player. I mean, I don't know if a good player raises with King 9. You know, I mean, two limpers, but she's aggressive, but raises with King 9 and then shoves with King 9 when the absolute nuts is out there. You know, I just don't know how great this player was. You know, I'm trying to figure that out. King 9 of Hearts. So she put it all in on a one card to come draw, knowing she has to be behind. You know.
Yeah, to the extent that I am not going to give her credit for being great, it is that shove there. Because at that point, if you have the hearts, don't you want the hearts to hit?
Yeah. I mean, she doesn't even have to shove
now. I mean, if you shove now, I mean, you have to give us credit for almost the exact hand we have.
Yeah.
Which means to get our money in, right?
Yeah.
Which means that you have to hit to win, so that doesn't seem like a good play. And we're assuming that her, and I'm still convinced at this point, or fairly convinced, that the button had Jack 10. We don't want to shove us out of the pot. This is the same thing we talked about, right? And then yeah. Be heads up against them and just have to hope we hit her hard to win the main pot? That doesn't make any sense either.
No, I know. I just can't put King 9 and that shove at the end together and say she's a good player.
You know, now, pre-flop, I don't really mind it. I mean, that's not a hand that I think anybody normally should play. But if you figure you got a good read on this table, and she's got $661, so she's doing all right, and it's a table where you think you can outplay these people, or you have outplayed them, then it doesn't really matter what two cards you have. And then you just got some help with the flop anyhow, in case you were wrong.
Well, the thing that gets me too, is,
but,
you know,
but that shove is just terrible.
Yeah, the shove is really bad. But even the King 9 of Hearts, okay, so you're entering a pot, you're raising, but you also have the biggest stack at the table, at least it seems like he's the biggest stack, right to your left.
Right.
And you're raising with King 9, he's in position on you. You have King 9. Yeah. You know what I mean? Fine that she's aggressive and likes to gamble, but I don't know. So, at that point...
Would you think the raise is going to help make Vic define his hand for you? I mean, if you're right, you get the big stack behind you, but I mean, the best way to do with that is to raise and get him out of the pot, and then you don't have to worry about him, right?
Well, yeah, so if it defines his hand,
then he's defined, and if he just calls, which is what he did, this is the worst thing that could happen for
yeah.
then you're in trouble.
That's what I mean. $15 to an $800 stack is nothing, so raising with King 9 isn't going to help define his hand at all.
It depends on how good the player is. I mean, you know, just because you have 800 doesn't mean you're going to splash around, you know. If you've got a middling hand and you've got a player that's been aggressive and winning next year, raises, and, you know, I'm going to pick my spots.
And then, so she gets three calls, and hits the top pair, but you would think that somebody had better than King 9 in that spot, who could make a call for her 45, you know, and then she bets out again, and I don't think this player is as good as as he was indicating.
Either that or had a momentary lapse in this hand. Where
yeah, that could be it too.
Ton of mistakes.
That could be it too. But that,
really
that was
absurd.
A
why would
call.
You want to check and see you try to get a free card out of it? Because everybody's going to let you get a free card there unless they have the Jack 10, right?
Right. Man. So I think we agree that the button probably had something like Jack 10. I mean, how else could he have? What else is he shoving with?
Unless there's no reason to set
of sixes, maybe.
Else. Right, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
Well, that's a hand to tell the grandkids about there, isn't it?
Yeah, that's tough. That's a tough call to make, man.
And grow some hair on the chest hand there. It all works out. And then, by the way, here's an extra 200. Just put it with the rest.
Well, you've been listening to Vic's Hand of the Week. Thanks for sending it in. And thanks to Justin Timberlake and Ben Affleck for entertaining us. And we'll see you guys next week. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Hey, Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Should I put the ear on?
Yeah,
it's a recording, but... Okay, we're recording. I'll do the whole intro like I normally do.
Yeah.
You gotta hold it.
Do you want to wait till you get out from traffic?
No.
You know where you're going, right?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of know where I'm going.
Like, it'd be kind of weird to do directions in the middle of a show.
Yeah.
All right, you gotta go out there, left, and then left to light. By the time we get to your next turn, we'll probably be done.
Yeah, I was going to say, honestly, it's 10 minutes as far as tops all we need. Okay, so... You ready?
Yep.
It's October 4th, 2013, and you're listening to the... I was trying to figure out what
we're
I was
going to
say.
We're going to fuck up that part, man. You're not going to be able to get through the rest of it.
I was going
to
say the most mobile podcast ever or something, but I guess it's not
going to work. So. It's kind of funny. I was going to say something like that, too, but, you know, you promised like a fucking deer in headlights there.
Yeah,
don't kill us here, either.
I'm not going to kill us.
Yeah, this car's coming the other direction, too.
Yeah, I know.
My size, so I care more about that.
All right.